Thank you. Good morning, good afternoon to everyone. On today's IRCC call on Tuesday, the 18th of January, we have Michele Nylon, Paul Diaz, Kevin Edison, Barbara Steele, Barry Cobb, Holly Hope, Bob Mountain, Simonetta Bottega, Rob Golding, Chris Chaplow. From staff, we have Marika Konings and myself, Gisela Gruber-White, and apologies noted today from Marty O'Connor and Annual George. I hope I haven't left anyone off the list. If you can please remind you all to state your names when speaking for transcript purposes. Thank you. Over to you, Michele.
Just to note as well, thank you, James Bladel has also sent apologies. It just landed in people's inboxes now.
Thank you, noted.
Okay. I thought I saw somebody else sending apologies. Was it Mike? Did you say Mikey had sent apologies?
Correct, Mikey O'Connor.
See? I'm doing well today. Woohoo! Right then, good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, girls and boys. As per normal, I must ask you all, does anybody have any updates to their declarations of interests or of interests or statement of interests? Going once, going twice. No? Fine. Okay. Right then, and I see as well, today quite a few people actually aren't on the call that would normally be involved in the thick of things. And Simonetta, you have to leave early.
Yeah, I do.
That's okay. That's okay. Right then. Okay, the agenda for today, we're continuing the discussion on the recommendations, and we have an updated view on the screen there, and Marika can show us all sorts of shiny things now since she can put nice little arrows on the screen and everything, like she's just doing now for everybody who's on Adobe Connect. And then another thing we're going to have a quick look at as well is this entire discussion about the EPP status values, which I know you're all dying to do. Before I get to that, just to deal with this thing with the Adobe Connect stuff, just so you're all aware, because we started discussing this before people, some of you logged in, if you want to raise your hand, you will need to go to the top of the screen in Adobe Connect, and you've got the meet where it says meeting, you go two across, and you have the option to raise your hand. That option used to be on the bottom of the screen. That pretty much covers, that's the key difference with the previous version of Adobe Connect. Is there anything else we need to know about this, Marika? Any other obvious functions that people have used in other calls?
Actually, you're my first group in the new Adobe Connect, so I'll take as well all the feedback. I saw that Rob, for example, posted some comments there. So if any other comments you have, just post them there or send them to me, and I'll take them back to our IT team so they can, you know, look into it or answer any questions we might have, because I was just trying out and seeing how things work. So it would be good to have your input. And to Paul's question, I'll also check indeed if there's any community training foreseen. You know, as I said, there are a couple of videos that I thought were quite useful to at least show the main differences between the old Adobe Connect and a new one. As also noted, that most of the changes in features are mostly applicable to the hosts of the meeting. There are more things where you can indeed draw or use different fonts. I think for participants, you know, Michele highlighted already the main ones, the different option to raise your hand on the top, having the private chat in different tabs. But I'll check what is foreseen there and then let you know when or what will take place.
Cool. Yeah, the only thing I'm noticing is if you bring, like everybody else has said, if you bring your mouse over a person's name, their name disappears. It whites out. Simonetta, you're on Windows. Does that do that for you as well?
Yes.
Okay, so it does it on Windows and it does it on a Mac. Okay, not the end of the world. Okay, then, where were we at in these recommendations, Marika? Which page were we on?
This is Marika. Maybe you can go quickly from the top and get an update on some of the items that we discussed in the last meetings. Maybe that's the best approach. Or if you prefer to start with those.
Well, I can tell you, for example, with recommendation two, so I see my name's mentioned there. We haven't done, none of us have done anything about that yet. That has not happened. It says there, a small group of volunteers who draw from SSAC 044 and do something with that. We haven't actually done anything about that so far. We obviously need to, but we haven't yet. The entire thing here, recommendation three, we had a lot of backwards and forwards about the unanimous versus rough consensus, and we agreed that rough consensus was the best, was the status with that most, that there was, well, there was a fairly unanimous decision that rough consensus was the correct status to give there, and I don't think we need to spend any more time on that. Okay, let's see. I'm sorry to see how this next page thing works. Well, it actually worked quite well. Is there a way that we can... Oh, hold on. Sorry, you just excuse me, people, while I'm trying to get used to this thing here. Marika, is there any way to get... If I put type in a percentage, does that work? Oh, it does. Okay, never mind. That's actually pretty cool. I don't think that was there before. Right. You see all the various other edits and everything else. Which items? We'd gone through this entire thing pretty much, hadn't we, Marika?
No, we actually. Let me see.
We left off
on recommendation number four, because there we actually have an action item, I think, from two calls ago where, am I looking at the right one? There was one where Simonetta and Bob agreed to go back and get some further input on that and provide some suggestions to the list, and I don't think that has happened yet.
Okay, Bob and Simonetta, what's the situation with that?
This is Simonetta. Maybe I can go first. So I did go back to my team and I asked them for some input on this one, and as I thought, they actually, in practical operational terms, very often make use of the admin fee email for regular transfers with an ownership tied to it, any kind of aftermarket transaction. So they said that, of course, you can work around this. It's going to disrupt things, and it's going to make operations for the transfer team a lot harder if they cannot work with the admin fee anymore moving forward. And then I was thinking about this a little more, and I was wondering, for any kind of transfer, even if it's if no ownership is tied to it at all, I assume that, and I don't know if we have enough registrars on the group to really know about this right now, that even a normal transfer where it's the same owner coming over, the gaining registrar would probably have to make use of the email address that's mentioned in the WHOIS, because as a gaining registrar, you don't really have anything else to work off. So I really wonder if for WHOIS records where the registrant email isn't displayed, and I've seen quite a few of these, how this would actually work. So in all practical terms, I don't really think this is a good recommendation to make without looking into it further. And I think I was writing that as my initial response to this, and I believe it was James writing to the work group at some point that after speaking to his team back at GoDaddy, he was actually supporting this. Unfortunately, he isn't on this call right now, so I can't ask him what additional input he got from them. But my team would not be happy with this recommendation, as I thought. So,
okay.
The feedback I gathered, I haven't come up with a good way to put it in words in terms of how we could word the recommendation, but maybe that's something we can try to work out over the coming week.
Okay, so I'm just, before I go to Rob, could you put that in just in an email to the main, to the list, please. Because also this helps just to make sure that it's clear exactly what they're saying and how they're saying it. And for those people who aren't on the call, they'll be able to see it there. Now, I've got Rob there. Does anybody else want to get in the queue with respect to this point? And I've also got Bob. Okay, Rob and then Bob.
Yeah, as a English relatively new registrar, we've obviously come in many years later than some people. But one thing that's come up in getting our systems ready for OT&E with the registries is that of transfers and contacts. On a thick whois, it's relatively easy. But on the thin whois, it's largely guesswork. I mean, we've had to write parsers for over 140 different whois outputs to literally screen scrape the port 43 content in order to work out who the contents are, contacts are, when somebody tries to transfer a domain to us. And one thing that's repeatedly coming up is that lots of registrars hide lots of the details. Now, I can understand the supposed anti-spam issue of not giving out a contact's email address in a public whois. It doesn't actually stop any spam at all because people just bombard every domain in existence with every possibility they can think of. But it does make transfers and the operation of an actual registrar very, very difficult.
Okay. Bob and then Simonetta.
Yeah, I would more or less echo what's been said already. I spent some time with our domain transfer group, and I think in a perfect world, it wouldn't be an issue, but you know, over the course of a day or a week, you run into so many instances where you don't have the information, you know, just as part of the registrant contact, and that admin contact gives you sort of a back door. It's good to have. You know, if it was absolutely, you know, impossible to get to have that, we'd certainly figure out a way around it, and you just have to work that much harder. But I think it's, you know, based on what I could see, you know, that with how that team uses that information, I'd be reluctant to endorse them not having access to that at this time.
Simonetta?
I mean, I just wanted to repeat this because maybe the first time I said it wasn't clear. Oftentimes, the only thing you do have access to is the admin's email address, and taking this away is going to make transfers, regardless of whether or not there is an ownership change tied to it, a lot harder. So I really don't think this is a great idea in a world where you still have senhuises, where you have no other means to get to a way to contact the registrant.
Okay. Does anybody else have any other thoughts on this? Paul Diaz?
Yeah, thanks, Michele. Just to be clear, folks, so if we, given the concerns that have been expressed, and I'm not going to try and put words in James's mouth today about change of control, just to have it clear in my head, if we go with the alternative language, we are not going to change anything in terms of registrant admin contact. Things will continue to work as they do today, correct?
That's my understanding, correct.
Okay, and then the follow-up, I just was pulling up. God, the wiki is really slow to load, but it's finally here. Then that means that we are basically not saying anything in our charter question B about registrant admin contact. We're silent on this issue, but we're introducing a new recommendation about a future group taking on this change of control issue. Correct?
That's my understanding.
Okay. Just want to make sure that we're, because we're getting close to the end, it's very easy to start losing track of all the things we're doing or deliberately skipping over. Just wanted to be clear for the record.
I think, Paul, part of this is that, like, as you know, with some of the CCTLDs, there is a clearly defined trade concept, and then there is a transfer concept. And that with the GTLDs, this isn't really handled. I think that's part of where we were coming from with respect to this entire thing of the control. So if anybody wants to jump in and lambast me for getting that wrong, please feel free. Paul and Simonetta both want to attack me. Okay. Go on, Paul.
Definitely not an attack, McKinley. Just a suggestion then for the sake of the folks who might read this report, or at least the executive summary, we might want to add a sentence to this alternative language, something to the effect that says, the group addressed the issue of registrar and admin contacts, but could not come to a recommendation. However, and then you introduce this change of control thing for the future. That way we just close off the idea of...
So we haven't ignored it, we just...
Exactly, we didn't ignore it, we just didn't come to a recommendation, but we do have this other issue we want to raise.
That seems very reasonable. I'll let Marika in ahead of Simonetta.
Yeah, this is Marika. I'm just quickly looking at the report, but the other recommendation that actually fits with this specific charter question is the one on quiz. I'm not saying that specifically answers the question, but we do have another recommendation as well under this specific charter question, and that's the who is recommendation.
Could you, Marika? Could you just for my own sanity? Could you put the actual charter questions up on the screen below the notes or in the notes or something, so I can just see them beside what we're discussing here? Or is that?
This Marika, it's actually in the document on the screen, on the top of each of the relevant recommendations for each of the charter questions. The charter question is there. So if you scroll a little bit up,
yeah, I was actually just okay.
But all I can right. Put it up as well in the
notes. No, because I was trying to see them all in the one thing without having to scroll. Sorry for being a pain in the backside or whatever. But you're saying then that while we're trying to address it under one, it's addressed under something else. Is that what you're saying, Marika?
No, what I'm trying to say is that for charter question B, the recommendations that we currently have and are currently discussing are recommendation 3 and recommendation 4. Both of those are underneath the charter question B. And if you scroll further down, you see that on the charter question C, we're discussing recommendation 5, and under recommendation D, we have recommendation 6 and recommendation 7. So I've tried to group them in a way that they are linked to the charter questions.
Okay, yeah, sorry. So we actually are agreeing. I was just misunderstanding you. Simonetta, go ahead.
Well, that was actually where I was going with my comments. For me, recommendation 3 and recommendation 4 are actually tied in that regard, because if we would have a SIC who is for any GTLD as well as for everything else, then you could operationally be capable to have access to the registrant email so that you can do the messaging around transfers regardless of whether or not they have an ownership change tied to them, in a way so that you don't need to fall back on the admin C anymore. But reading the charter question B piece was whether additional provisions on undoing inappropriate transfers are needed, especially with regards to disputes between a registrant and admin C contact. I don't really know if those two recommendations really address the question fully. And one of the reasons why I didn't want to support recommendation 4 was that I felt, especially when it comes to ownership change at the same time with transfer, we haven't really looked into all the operational details that you need to look at to come up with a good recommendation around this. And that was why I was originally writing that we haven't done enough work on this to really come to a good recommendation. And then going back to my team and actually looking at some, I actually sat with them for 2 hours one afternoon to just really watch what is it they're actually doing. I think more of that type of work needs to be done, not just here at a company that deals with the aftermarket, but also some of the folks that work with registrars to really see operationally how is a normal transfer done these days, and where are the issues, and then really build from there a recommendation that is doing the process justice, because I don't feel we have done that work to really come to a good recommendation on this question. And that's why I said, okay, you need to really sit down and analyze this and look at it in much more detail than what I have seen the group doing so far.
Well, Samantha, with all due respect, I think we did actually discuss quite a bit of this in earlier parts of this working group before you joined us.
Okay.
We did.
That was always my caveat. I didn't know what you have.
Yeah. Well, a lot of the stuff we had discussed, and now this is my own personal view with some of this is that okay, the charter question itself. B, whether additional provisions on undoing inappropriate transfers are needed, especially with regards to disputes between a registrant and admin contact. The policy is clear that the registrant can overrule the admin, but how this is implemented is currently at the discretion of the registrar. Sorry, one second. Now, I think what we seem to have done, is we've identified the areas around transfers where there are issues, and as has been pointed out by several people, including yourself and Rob, there is a problem between thick versus thin in how they're currently used. So, for example, if I'm having if I'm transferring a .org from Registrar A or Registrar Z, you know, it may fail for any number of reasons, but the email address is not going to be one of them, because the whois format is going to be standard. Whereas if I transfer a domain from three or four different registrars when in thin, then chances are that at least one of them will probably fail because we'll have been unable to work out what the email address is. So this is where the first recommendation three came from. The other thing is, you know, I think we did have some discussions about these disputes. I think we were looking more at the root causes for a lot of this stuff. So how could they actually be avoided? I don't know. Does anybody else have any other thoughts on this at the moment? Chris? Barry? Paul? Those of you who are actually on the...
A good way to respond to the question would be that we could write up and say, we recognize this is where an issue are. However, we do not want to recommend the quick fix, which would be to just say, okay, admin C can't do anything anymore because of these other reasons. So that it becomes clear that we didn't just say, okay, well, nothing should be done, but that we actually looked at this and said, okay, for these reasons, we don't want to make that recommendation.
Okay. Marika?
Yeah, this is Marika. Just to point out that I've posted in the note pod the relevant discussion notes from that are currently contained in the draft final report that are taken from the conversations we've had at the, you know, prior to the initial report. And I think there's some new stuff in there as well that we added based on the discussions or review of the public comments. So that might provide a little bit of the context of the discussions that the working group has had to date.
Okay. Just out of kind of a quick interest. Okay, oh, sorry, go ahead, Bob.
Sorry, Mikhail. I guess for those of us who did come in after the initial discussions were done, are there sort of use cases to kind of highlight the threads or, you know, paths where this has come turned into a problem? And just to sort of educate those of us who weren't there, and, you know, so we know what work has been done and sort of bring us up to speed more quickly?
What are you looking for, as in the previous discussions on this, or...?
You know, I don't know if anyone... Has anyone done a use case or use cases on those situations where these sort of conflicts have arisen? I don't know if that would help or not? I guess Barry's saying no. Okay. I don't know.
Bob, I'm speaking for myself. I can see scenarios where there could be conflicts between an admin and registrant contact, mm-hmm. but I haven't seen a lot of large conflicts, and I think some of the conversations we have now, somebody else can correct me, this is just going based on my own memories, some of these disputes we would have said, well, it was kind of outside the process in that if I have a falling out with you, so if Michele representing Black Knight has a falling out with Bob representing Name Media, why the hell would ICANN get involved? It's just a commercial dispute between the two parties.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's not that it wouldn't happen, but you can't really go off making policies for, you know, every single possible commercial dispute that could possibly happen between two or more parties.
Mm-hmm. Right.
That's my own kind of vague recollections. I could be rewriting my memory. So Barry or somebody, please feel free to either disagree with me or add something or whatever. Barry, do you have any recollections of this? You're saying that we talked about it, but we didn't document it.
Hi, Michele. This is Barry. Thank you. This is kind of basically the first half of IRTP when we started talking about this stuff. And correct me if I'm wrong, Bob, but what you're really gunning for, and which is really more up my alley, is, you know, you look at the process, you document the process of, you know, what it is from start to end, and then you have standard use cases that you run through that process to look for the anomalies or the things that are broken and those kinds of things. So in a formal sense, we didn't do that within the working group, especially around the use cases. When it came to addressing Charter Question B, we did informally discuss, well, what about this instance when, as Michele pointed out, kind of one example, or, you know, there were several examples batted around, but outside of formally documenting that use case and the inputs and outputs and the things that worked and didn't work, that wasn't done.
Thanks, Barry.
Thank you.
Personally, from my own recollections of this, Marika's saying as well that there was something in the issues report as well. Marika, do we, in the issues report, do they have specific cases, or was it a case of just kind of anecdotal, you know, there seems to be an issue with X, though no actual evidence? Do you recall, Marika?
This is Marika. That part of the issue report is actually also included in the draft final report as serving as background information. What is in there is, for example, specifically a comment from GoDaddy in relation, you know, what happened in the previous process when people were gathering the issues and identifying problems. So they identified this as a specific issue. And there's also a quote from a staff report where it's also identified that the policy is clear that it provides the registry operators to implement and make available a transfer undo mechanisms. But it notes as well that the way that's being done is not prescribed and it's unclear how it actually needs to be implemented. As the policy recommendation only required that registries develop such a mechanism, and I can encourage coordination among registries, but to determine that registries could be individually responsible for their own implementation of this mechanism. And then there's also another document quoted there from a previous transfer working group. It also notes that repatriation of inappropriately transferred names is difficult and processes are still unclear. This is mostly evident in incidences where a registrant has objected to a transfer despite the approval of the admin contact. The transfer policy is quite clear that the registrant trumps the admin contact, but it's not clear how these types of veto situations should be handled. The result is an inconsistent application of policy and increased risk of domain theft. So there's some, you know, different venues where this issue has already been discussed, and I'm happy to look back as well on finding further information, but it seems that all of those point to the fact that, you know, there is a policy, but it seems to be unclear from, you know, a certain step in the process, how it's to be implemented and how to be, you know, how it's to be dealt with, which results in different approaches.
I mean, I'm just reminding myself now, at the moment, there is no way that compliance can pick up on specific complaints of that nature where there's a disagreement between the admin and the registrant. That's probably not being captured, is it? Or I don't remember there being anything on the spreadsheet. Somebody remembers. The chat here, by the way, is quite interesting. Rob is giving a few examples of issues involving admin contacts and registrant contacts where they're husbands and wife and disagreeing about things, which reminds me of several issues that we faced. Bob and then Simonetta.
Yeah, this is Bob. So is there only one use case, and that's the one we've outlined, where there is a disagreement on a transfer between registrant and admin seat, or are there multiple? And either way, would it help, rather than just punt it, would it help to document the use cases and use that as a basis for another discussion on the topic?
Anybody?
Chris here. Another new use case might be where the webmaster has registered himself as the registrant, where the owner is obviously...
Where is the owner registered and who is, Chris?
Well, this is one we discussed right at the beginning of the definitions.
No, I know, but just in this particular scenario, where is the actual owner. In inverted commas?
Well, the nearest that we get to owner is the registrant.
So the admin contact is the designer and the registrant contact is the actual owner.
And the registrant contact is the actual... No, and the web designer, for want of a better word... is also the registrant. So one side of the argument says, well, that puts it out of the remit of this working group. But it is a very real case, a use case. This sort of thing does happen.
Oh, I know it happens. I do know what happens. But the problem is I'm trying to understand, and it's not a case of ignoring this at all. Is this the correct venue for kind of the inappropriate use of domain contacts, or is that inappropriate use of who is, or is that a general education issue? What is it? Simonetta? And then Rob?
I have more of a question. When I originally thought about hijacking, I thought of random person X who wants to do somebody harm is actually stealing a domain name from this person and takes it away to multiple registrars in a row to try and hide and evade the whole process. That was when I think hijacking, that's what I'm thinking of. What I'm hearing here as a problem seems to be more of a dispute between two people. Thing that is husband, wife, web designer, owner of company type thing. Is that what people think of as well when they think and hear hijacking?
Simonetta, I'll answer that just to... It is a form of hijacking. We've seen this happen, and I'm sure Rob and some of the other registrars have, where effectively a third party, be they a web designer, web developer, ISP, or whatever, is able to take control of a load of domains and effectively remove the possibility of any control or any say in where those domains are or what happens with them or the charges levied on them, everything through this mechanism. It's not the same as somebody nefariously hacking a registrar system or hacking somebody's email account, but the end result can be not dissimilar. Rob, and then Bob?
From a logical point of view, surely hijacking is simply taking control of something which you're not authorized to do. The question becomes, how do you determine authorization? If an admin contact changes the who is so that they are suddenly the registrants, that potentially could be, certainly with the courts in the UK, that could be considered to be theft and can be reversed by court orders and so on and so forth. However, if at registration they are the admin contact and the registrant, then from all systems' point of view, it's their domain. It's not a case of them then hijacking it or taking it away from the owner, because the owner, by definition, on these things is the registrant. There is no separation of ownership and registrant information in things like com.org, etc.
Thanks, Rob. Bob?
I just want to echo something. Just thinking back to some discussions we've had with our legal team here on these sort of disputes, and that it's not necessarily a policy. The policy or the venue for this is not policy. That does start to turn into a legal situation where it's a dispute between two parties, not one for a registrar to necessarily sort out. But the venue on that might be much more a commercial discussion or a litigation between two parties. So I think I'd probably, and just kind of recollecting back to where we've had these discussions before, that's I think where we've always come out on.
Okay, thanks, Bob. Anybody else?
Yes, Chris here. Yeah, that point before actually was quite interesting, and perhaps that's definitive, isn't it, that brings it into our remit. If the admin contact changes the registration, that equals theft. If the initial registration was done incorrectly, then it's probably outside our remit, and you're more into the world of the secondary contact between the registrant, or indeed we often call it the name holder, because it's almost like a proxy. Ownership scenario, although it hadn't been set up correctly.
The thing, Chris, is for some of the CCTLDs, there's a whole range of different options available for kind of changes if the domain were registered, in between inverted commas, say, incorrectly with the wrong details or whatever. You can change something quite easily. In other cases, you have to jump through hoops.
Flaming hoops while riding a dolphin on the back of a motorbike.
Exactly. Thank you. Was that Ollie? Or was that Rob?
That was Rob.
Okay. Sorry. The dolphin should have given me the thing that it was Rob as opposed to Ollie.
If we're looking at different cases or different scenarios, then we could mention this as a scenario and then say we think it's outside the remit. So at least it, for the reader of the report, they know we've considered it, or they know the one that comes into their head might be the wrong one that isn't in our remit.
Well, I think we should put, if you want to suggest some language to that effect, Chris, that would be helpful.
Okay.
Something very rough. The thing with this is that, the thing you raise, for example, and the kind of scenarios that a couple of people have mentioned are scenarios that do merit attention, but maybe not all of them are going to fit into IRTP Part B, C, D, or Z, because it's a slightly different issue. But obviously, yes, as Rob said, anybody starts kidnapping, taking domains without people's permission, then there is a hijacking there. Barbara, go ahead.
Hi, just a quick observation. I know that the policy, the way it's written today, doesn't require, but the losing registrar has the option of sending out a confirmation FOA to either the registered name holder or the admin contact. And what I'm wondering, if we were to change the policy or recommend that we change the policy so that that is actually a required confirmation. I mean, a lot of times when you're transacting something on the internet, I will get an email saying that, you know, you have to respond to this within X number of days, otherwise we're going to ignore your request. And what I'm wondering is if we were to change it so that the losing registrar would send out that confirmation FOA and to the registered name holder, because they should have that information in their records, and require that they actually do respond to it in a positive confirmation, if that would then alleviate some of the disputes between the admin contacts and the registrant.
Okay. Does anybody have any thoughts on this? Simonetta?
Just practical observation again from what I've seen and the transfer team. A lot of people don't respond to things. So one of the beauties of the current implementation is that it auto-acts after 5 days of one of the parties not responding at all. So to require an actual response for the process to be completed is going to lead to a lot of additional operational support for any kind of transfer situation.
Samantha, Michele, surely it also reduces a lot of operational support as well. Because it's in the case of, say, domains transferring from GoDaddy to Black Knight to Network Solutions to Othello to Domain Monster, if we're sending out confirmations and everything else and doing other things, then we're probably reducing some of our customer service costs.
I'm not sure about that, because if someone truly wants to transfer their name and the reason it doesn't go through is because from email doesn't get to someone's inbox and where they don't see it because they have so many emails, or it goes to spam or whatever, and that's the reason why the transfer doesn't go through, the next thing that person's going to do is probably going to pick up the phone and call losing or gaining or both registrars to figure out what's going on. So just observation, not saying it's not a good idea, it's just something that I fear will lead to additional work for everyone involved.
Okay, Barbara?
I agree, Simonetta. It definitely could lead to some additional work. But, you know, as I said, a lot of times when I'm doing something, it will come back and literally it'll put it on the screen, in order to complete this transaction, you must respond to, you know, this communication that you're going to receive from us via email or what have you. And positively confirm that you do want to have it happen. So at that point, you know, if you don't receive the email within X period of time, then yes, it would drive perhaps a call into the customer support area. But it seems to me that would be a little more positive than somebody's name being taken inappropriately.
Marika, you had your hand up.
Yeah, this is Marika. You already clarified one thing for me at the conversation, but I'm wondering as well if the losing registrar is asked to confirm with the registrant that they want to move, and that the losing registrar can just say, oh, well, they didn't confirm with me, so the transfer is not going to happen, whether that's as well opening an avenue for gaming the system, while the losing
gaming
registrar
the system
doesn't
by
sense that...
By the registrar or the registrant?
By the losing registrar. They said, well, I sent a confirmation form, but they never confirmed it, so I assumed that they didn't want to transfer, or a way of saying, you know, basically not sending the form and therefore not acknowledging that there has been that request. I'm wondering if there's, you know... Because I know
okay.
that we've... I know
okay,
that there
Marika,
has been...
Marika, as a registrar, at the moment, I have to keep records of the registrant agreeing to the domain being transferred to us. So if for incoming transfers, I have to keep a record of that. Paul has to keep a record of it. Rob has to keep a record of it. Ollie has to keep a record of it. So so does him and us on Bob. There's nothing technically to stop us from falsifying those records, technically speaking. I could easily falsify it. I could easily generate random IP addresses and random whatevers to say that all of these people had clicked on things when they hadn't, but they hadn't agreed to it. I could do that. But if I were to do that, then all the other registrars were to do that, then the entire system would fall apart.
Right, but then in that case, you have falsified documents. In this case, it will be just not sending an email. I mean,
It's the same thing, though. It's the same thing, because we would be, for example, if ICANN Compliance were to receive a complaint about domain names from us not being transferred out, then they might poke around further and discover that, you know, we're denying, you know, all transfers out. We haven't had a single transfer out in the last 6 months. Then that's going to, they'd wonder why the hell that was happening. I mean, it's something that could be audited. Do you understand what I mean, Marika?
Right. I understand what you're saying, but yeah, I need to think it further through, but I know there have been discussions in the past as well, and indeed, you know, affirmative confirmation, and I know there have been issues identified with it as well, that, you know, it could be used as a blocking mechanism, for example, but, you know, but I'll let the group discuss and see, you know, what
the
rest thing is. I think it's probably a suggestion as well to share with the mailing list, as we have some people not on the call to see if that's...
Oh, no, fair enough. What I would say to you is this, Marika, is look, if a registrar is a total and utter degenerate scumbag and just wants to lock in all the registrants and stop them from transferring out, there's a whole load of different mechanisms that they could attempt to use. But I don't honestly think that they could get away with it for very, very long. I can see, you know, that, you know, complaints would be submitted to the gaining registrars. The gaining registrars would get... trying to think what's the polite word, frustrated with the situation, would probably complain to ICANN. The registrants would complain to ICANN. There would be complaints. I can't see it causing an issue. I mean, we've had problems in the past with certain other registrars being a little bit odd about certain things. And, you know, an email to them or an email to ICANN staff or compliance or whatever, and then, you know, the problems have kind of gone away fairly quickly. You know, it's not, they might try it, but I don't think they can, it's tenable long term. Right, we're almost at the end of the hour. This entire thing about the authenticating a transfer out concept, maybe it's best if we actually put some of that onto the list, and so those people who aren't on the call today could discuss it a bit further. Barbara, since you kind of brought this up, would you mind emailing the list with a kind of a rough outline of your thinking on this?
Sure, I'm happy to do that.
Just some kind, even something kind of short, sweet, and, you know,
yep,
to the point or whatever. Okay, then. Also, there was some discussion on the list with respect to kind of, well, I suppose, in short, killing off ETRP completely. The only person, I think, who was actually on, let me see, was it Paul who put that forward? Was it you, Paul?
Yeah, it was, Michele.
Right. I mean, you were pretty concise about it.
Honestly, I tried to be, but I realized I just see Barry's just posted to the list. He did do the effort of looking at the flow charts, and quite honestly, in out of respect to all the effort, maybe we have one more call and see where we stand as a group, but... if I read correctly, we have at least five members of the sub-team who've agreed to wrap this up, five or six now. That's most
okay.
of the
well,
group.
I Well, the one thing I would say is that the flowchart is useful anyway, regardless of anything else. I think Barry's flowcharts are amazing, and I think he should be commended for them, because they do help make sense of a lot of these things. I mean, Barry, you're looking after the second half of this call. Actually, you got your hands up. Go ahead, Barry.
Thank you, Kaylee. This is Barry. You know, I guess for the second half of the call, I'm not sure we're going to need the full hour. Let me start off by saying, I guess overall I'm kind of disappointed that everybody's jumping on the bus to put EPRP to sleep. After the review that that Mike and I did over the past week and the flowcharts I just sent out, perhaps I'll even agree that EPRP should be put to rest. However, I don't think that, I don't know, I guess first and foremost, I'm a little disappointed that we're giving up on it just for the fact to try to meet San Francisco date. There's a problem that needs to be addressed here, and I think we're just putting it to rest. Bottom line, again, I will support putting EPRP in its present form to rest, and the reason why I say that, and it's really just kind of kicking off into the next hour, is having reviewed the swim lanes and the IRTP policy itself, in a quick summary, EPRP, or the procedure for restoring the domain, is already there in IRTP. So, not being a part of the original EPRP group, I'm not sure how that subteam got started down the road of creating a separate sub-policy, if you will. But when you start reading through the details of the IRTP policy, that restore procedure already exists. What doesn't exist is the time frames and a mechanism that EPRP tried to implement doesn't exist. And so specifically, kind of like as a homework assignment for everyone to review, unless you've memorized IRTP, Section 6 of the registry requirements, the fourth paragraph, the registry operator shall undo a transfer if, after a transfer has occurred, the registry operator receives one of the notices set forth below. In such case, a transfer will be reversed and the domain names reset to its original state. The RO must undo the transfer within 5 calendar days of receipt of notice, except in the case of registry dispute decisions, in which case the registry operator must undo the transfer within 14 calendar days unless a court action is filed. The notice required shall be one of the following. 1, agreement of registrar of record and gaining registrar sent by email, letter, or fax that the transfer was made by mistake or otherwise not in accordance with the procedure set forth in policy. 2, the final determination of a dispute resolution body having jurisdiction over the transfer. Or 3, order of a court having jurisdiction over the transfer. So, Mike and I talking in the behind the scenes this past week, we're of the opinion that definitely EPRP in its present form should be sunset, but we do believe that we could look at modifying the existing policy, specifically with Section 6, and then there would be one or two updates to the responsibilities for registrar of record and gaining registrar, where we may be able to satisfy some sort of urgent restore. Certainly some of the questions or concerns about implementing this that may still exist in terms of how quickly should a restore be done and those kinds of things that we would need to work out.
Okay.
I'll leave it at that for now.
All right. Then, look, it's the top of the hour. I have to drop off, and I think a couple of the people might have to. Thanks, everybody, for your input today. So if you have anything you want to follow up on, please do so on the list wherever possible. And I'll speak to you all same time next week. Thanks.
Michaela?
Yes?
Is there one last thing I can raise?
Sure.
I just want to ask the group whether people would agree setting a deadline for review of the draft final report, you know, not taking into account, you know, not including the language on the recommendations that we're still working on, but the other part, you know, the notes, the language that's in there, the different elements, so we can have people focusing on that as well, so that by the time we have agreement on the recommendations, we can just slot those in on the respective places. And not having to go back then to other parts. So would people be comfortable in setting a deadline, I don't know, like 2 weeks from now or something?
I'm happy with that, Marika.
Okay, great. I'll include it for in the action items for this call.
Okay, perfect. I'm going to drop off. And I will leave you hand over to Mr. Berry, and speak to you all again. Bye bye.
All right, thank you, McKaylee. So I'll try to just pick up. We'll just keep this second hour short. I'm not sure we don't have all the participants on the call. Others need to drop, and so just for in terms of getting this on the audio record is what we'll do. I just sent out a PDF. It contains 5 pages, the second page being my first version of trying to swim lane the IRTP. Essentially what I did here was I took the old process diagrams that I believe were generated in IRTPA, which is page 4, I believe, and that's kind of how I started modeling the swim lane. Then I went into the actual IRTP document and started reading it front to back and looking for any changes and adjustments to the IRTP swim lane. As I mentioned, in going through this exercise, I realized that the restore procedure is there. We just need to make, if the stakeholders on this call are still interested in trying to resolve this problem, maybe we just need to take the approach of updating our existing policies as opposed to creating a new one. And I think that that's achievable. However, there's, you know, there is going to be some concerns or some questions that need to be answered as to how it's invoked, how quickly a restore is done, will the registry and registrars sign up for essentially what are going to be service levels for restore of a domain, which was kind of part of the original ETRP and some of those issues. The only other thing I'll say is, again, please note that this IRTP swim lane is only a draft. What I haven't done in terms of completing it is how you would invoke the Section 6. But essentially what you'll see is there is a brown activity or task boxes, or maybe tan, and those are denoting kind of sub-processes. One is to invoke the TDRP at whatever point in the process, and the second, which is in the registry operator swim lane, which is the invoking the restore to original state procedure, which I'm still working through. I didn't get TDRP into the swim lanes yet, and the reason for that, again, is I pretty much stopped when I recognized that the restore procedure is there. So with that said, and since others have had to drop off, the only thing I can offer up right now is that in terms of homework, kind of review through the swim lane, please denote any errors or questions that I may have put in there, and I'll be happy to respond to those. One quick point of notice about the swim lanes as I'm looking at it, we just had some dialogue about the losing registrar sending a FOA to the registrant or admin contact for confirmation. Those activities are actually highlighted with a yellow outline to state that that is optional. So that's definitely noted here within the swim lanes. Anyway, 2 homework assignments, and then we'll try to pick this up next week, and certainly we'll discuss this on the list as to whether we continue forward or not. The first homework assignment is review through the swim lanes. second homework assignment is read the IRTP policy specifically with Section 6 and then think about how we can apply, if we want to apply any of the attributes of what ETRP originally tried to develop and maybe apply those within existing policy changes. Bob?
No, you answered the question. Actually, I was going to ask you know, which section of IRTP you thought we should focus on, so thank you.
Definitely Section 6, and the only other two sections that I would say that you should, well, there's three other sections that are important, which wouldn't really be changes, they would be additions, and that's the obligations of the registrar of record and the obligations of the losing registrar. What my own assignment will be for next week, Mikey and I started a draft of a revision of the IRTP and TDRP so that they have the right hooks going back and forth, but it's not in a shareable form at this point in time, so I do plan to update that and send it out to the list for your review as kind of a, you know, what-if type scenario. Marika.
This is Marika. I'm sorry because I missed the previous call, so I don't know exactly what was discussed then and why you're looking for new language, but I noticed that you're talking about TDRP and I think considering as well whether there could be enhancements maybe in that context that would address some of the ETRP questions, because just to note as well that one of the upcoming or next IRTP PDPs is supposed to look at as well at and enhancing the dispute policy. So if at some point this group does decide that, well, maybe this is not the right PDP to try to cover that in, but it might be more appropriate to do it in another context, for example, review of TDRP or certain elements there, that might be another venue where at some point in the future then all this work could be taken on board as part of. And I'm happy to look as well which other issues are part of that. I think it's a PDPD, which other issues have been identified to see whether that might fit actually with that what we're discussing in the context of the ETRP and whether that might be a link of not forgetting about this work but finding an overall context of addressing all the different elements that go together as well with ETRP but also dispute resolution overall.
Thank you, Marika. That would be very valuable to me. I don't know that I've seen like a summary list of the future issues to be reviewed in upcoming IRTP PDPs. That would be interesting. I guess probably I should clarify. The only reason after having reviewed and found this procedure, the only reason that TDRP would, if we decided to go down this road, that it would need to be updated would be the fact that the completion of the TDRP, if in fact a domain was transferred and then it was undone, as a result of some sort of dispute, TDRP were to kick in. At the end of TDRP, whatever that outcome is, the hook back into IRTP is whether that transfer should be undone. This is where it gets confusing. Is should the undo be undone and restored back to the original transfer? Outside of that, my initial review, I haven't seen anything else in the TDRP that would really need to be updated other than that additional hook back into IRTP. So that's basically all I have. Again, homework assignments. Any parting thoughts or questions from anybody? Looking clear. So I appreciate everybody taking their time. Enjoy the rest of your week. Please add thoughts and comments onto the list, and we'll pick this up next time. Thank you very much. Take care.
Thanks, Barry.